Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. All right, you might have seen my Instagram post on this thing called the Koba board. And this is like your at-home resistance, but beyond just like a resistance home workout, this piece of equipment really helps to understand within the body how to activate and properly hip hinge. If we could properly hip hinge in our body without needing the dowel or the stick and actually being able to use weight and resistance with it, not only do we get the proper stretch and load onto those glutes, but then as we're using the resistance to pull back up, we help to build the strength and the activation. So if you've ever been told you don't know how to activate your glutes, or you can't find your glutes, or they're asleep, they're amnesia. No, they're not. We just get to be placed in a position that helps us to better activate. And beyond just, you know, doing hip hinges and deadlifts, like Dom and I do so many different variations of lunges, of squats, of rotational work, of single leg balance, of hip thrusts. I mean, it goes on and on with what you can do with this board. And it is so easy. It's so practical. You can put it away anywhere. You can bring it along with you because it's super light. So go check it out. The link will be in our show notes. Use code OPTIMAL to get a discount on this and check it out. Grab it for yourself and help your glutes. All right, let me tell you a little bit about this next guest, Lauren Tauss, as she comes onto the podcast. Not only is this woman such an incredible soul and a good friend, but truly, truly creating healing in the world. And she's done this in so many different ways. And now what she's stepping into can feel a little bit scary, controversial. Maybe you're not sure about it, but I really just encourage you to listen in, because especially if we're talking about trauma, anxiety, depression, PTSD, this is something that a lot of humans will experience on some kind of level. And so just learning and opening yourself up to different tools that can really help with healing is so incredibly important. Lauren is a licensed clinical therapist in both New York and California with a specialty in addiction and trauma treatment. As a clinician, Lauren integrates alternative modalities of treatment into her work. And so that's really what we're going to talk about. I mean, not only has she done trauma-sensitive yoga, but she's trained by the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, also known as MAPS, for MDMA-assisted psychotherapy for complex PTSD. She's actively working under the supervision of Dr. Phil Wolfson, the author of Ketamine Papers, to offer ketamine-assisted psychotherapy to help individuals heal from depression, anxiety, and trauma. I mean, Lauren is doing so much amazing work, and she's really diving into the research in order to really bring these interventions back into the Western medicine world. Her father is an MD himself, and he's actually starting to look into this treatment as well, and they're working together. And it's something that is so beautiful that if you just open your mind, open your heart a little bit, and tune into what these therapies can do when treated well, right? When working with a clinical therapist. And I think that's really what the difference is of just what we might have heard about these drugs and how they're used in therapy. And that's really what we're going to dive into. What is the current research saying about it? What is it really doing for the body? And Lauren is just an incredible source who's going to help to bring it to us today. So thank you for taking the time to tune in with us. All right. I get my girl, Lauren Tauss, on the podcast, which I'm so excited. This is like finally, you guys. I mean, Lauren not only has been a yoga instructor for freaking ever.
20 years.
I was going to say 25. Wow. So long.
That's impressive.
Incredible mover, incredibly tapped in. Your yoga classes are things that are not just body, but you really speak into the listening, you speak into what's going on deeper inside. And that's what I always appreciated about your classes, which is what makes you also an amazing clinical therapist, you know, and what you do for clients. And I'm so excited to dive into the unknown for many people, and sometimes the little bit scary or skeptical worlds of psychedelics and how that plays a role in therapy and healing and trauma and so much more. And, you know, first of all, just thank you for being here. And second of all, if you just could tell the world, you know, the passion behind what you do. Like, why are you on this earth? What are you bringing here?
So good to be here too. Thank you. Gratitude is one of my favorite ways to pray. And I've been a yoga teacher for 20 years, and yoga, the word yoga, basically it means to yoke, to bring together. Mm-hmm. So my purpose on planet Earth is to create deeper levels of connection, both within my own personal ecosystem and in that practice to invite other people to connect more deeply with themselves and in so doing with each other, right? Because we've signed up as human beings for curriculum of separation, but we're not separate. And my personal journey led me from, you know, becoming a yoga teacher at 18 years old to later down the road becoming a psychotherapist and having really benefited from my own personal therapy. You know, I wouldn't go to a golf teacher that didn't golf. Like, if you're looking for a therapist, make sure your therapist has done their work and that they do their work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Truth.
And I loved therapy. And I love it. Like, so much of my work now is just traditional talk therapy. And there's so much medicine in telling your story and being seen and heard in it. And there's also a lot of like limitation to talk. Again, back to my personal journey with my own kind of consciousness explorations, I myself healed and holed in wildly accelerated ways that piqued my interest. And when I became present to the ways in which I could weave psychedelic medicine into my psychotherapy practice, into my yoga, I was like, okay, here I am. Let's go.
When is it that you first tried psychedelics?
My first psychedelic experience, which, by the way, my brother invited me to, and I'm very passionate about psychedelics in family constellations and as well in the ways in which psychedelic tools access the intergenerational content that we're working with, both on a trauma front and as on a resilience front. Like, we have that in our ancestries. My brother brought me about 7 years ago. And it was a beautiful beginning. And, you know, there's always more to unpack and experience. And anyway, once I became present to this weave, I knew that this would be what I'm up to for a long, long time.
That's so cool. And I love just saying from your purpose, creating more connection, but you start with your internal ecosystem. And many people who we've had on, we say the best companies, the best people who teach something have, of course, done all that work themselves first. And that's where they were born, as an amazing teacher in what they do. And there's so many places we can go here, from yoga to the psychedelics. And I love what you brought up about, you know, doing it with your brother first. Mm-hmm. And I think when I've heard about people who talk about psychedelics, you're like this dark side where the first time someone did psychedelics was in like a dungeon where they didn't know anybody and it was awful. And they're in like the bowels of HE double hockey sticks, or, you know, the worst place. But my first experience was with a family member also, and it was just beautiful. And the way we set it up really helped me understand how to deal with that experience when it came in, you know. And so can you talk a little bit about introing people to what psychedelics are, what that even means? I don't think it's very well known what being a psychedelic means. I think a lot of people think it's doing acid in a basement, playing Mario or something. I don't know.
Right. Like tie-dye stuff and like the Grateful Dead. So the word psychedelic is essentially mind or soul expanding. It's mind or soul revelation. It's widening the aperture to what we see. So by the way, being born as a human being wrapped in skin on planet Earth is a psychedelic experience. Integrating who our parents are is a psychedelic experience. Like, dealing with heartbreak is psychedelic. COVID is psychedelic. Like, what's been going on politically is psychedelic. Like, whoa, I haven't seen this kind of thing. Like, my dad is 76 years old, never seen some of this stuff. And so it's psychedelic. Now, I think that's so important because you don't have to ingest anything. Also, the first psychedelic known to man, when you talk about ingesting anything, is breath.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know you two are big breathwork lovers.
Big hands in the air over here. Because that's where I did breathwork with somebody. And he's literally like, first thing he said when we woke up from the breath experience, because I say, like, sometimes you get in these trances. And he's like, have you done mushrooms before? That's really what he said to me when we woke up from this experience. He was like, no. I'm like, no. But this was his first time experiencing the breath thing. He's like, that's the closest parallel I can see to what we just did. And that's the reason he convinced me to do the experience with him.
Because, I mean, you can get so high on your own supply in a way that is psychedelic in the kind of ways in which we more conventionally think about it.
Totally.
Right? So psychedelic is just kind of shifting, like, your perspective and, like, having an experience that's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, psychedelics in terms of ingesting a plant or compound has been part of human experience for eons. Like, there is absolutely nothing new about this. And these tools have been engaged with for rites of passage, for initiation, for all kinds of different reasons across the globe in pretty much every cultural tradition.
That coming into adulthood, almost, sometimes you see that present in different cultures.
Yeah.
And different psychedelic medicines included in rituals and ceremonies, totally.
Yeah, and certain death rituals. And, oh my gosh, I have so much to say about this stuff. I get so excited.
I love it.
And for me, you know, again, back to yoga, it's connection. So how do, and connection is also a form of integration. And when we're talking about a psychedelic experience, we also, if we're going to engage with these tools for the purpose of growth, for the purpose of healing, for the purpose of becoming more whole, require integration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the hugest part, I think.
Yeah. And it's the hugest part. It's bigger than the ceremony. It's bigger than the treatment. Otherwise, you know, I tell my clients, and I am predominantly a ketamine-assisted psychotherapist, which we can talk about.
Yes.
If you just have the treatment and we don't work on it together, you're going to go on an amusement park ride.
Yes.
I'm not interested in that. I want people to activate what they uncover, what they come to see, and allow for it to fertilize sustained life change.
That is huge. I think that's the one missing part. And that's where people get into, like, oh, you're just doing drugs, like, you know, and then they have this experience that took them out of this world into something, seeing something deeper for a moment, where it's like, I want to go back to that again and again and again without understanding how it incorporates into this life here.
Yeah.
Or what you're experiencing here.
Yes.
Or how you can heal from what you took and absorbed in that moment and stepping forward. And I think that's, you know, at least from my perspective, where people can have very harsh criticism about it or skepticism of why it's a drug and it's bad and it's, you know, whatever other label that we want to put on it, or why it's just woo-woo in this community and people just do it all the time and it's the new popular fad and all of this stuff. So aging back now, where do you think all the skepticism has really come from? Is it the war on drugs? Is it...
Yeah, the war on drugs is definitely a major effective movement that obstructed the proliferation of this work in a good way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so long ago that MDMA and LSD were legal for clinical application and were being engaged with by researchers and neuroscientists and psychiatrists and medical doctors in order to support the healing of PTSD, depression, anxiety, and a whole host of other medical conditions. And, you know, as a therapist, I love the relationship. And this is a really renegade thing for me to say. And I say it I say this, like, I love my clients. I love them. I'm not supposed to love my clients. Like, that's kind of like, no, you don't do that. No, I love them. And Carl Rogers said, unconditional positive regard. That was fancy language for love. The clinical space has gotten so far away from the appropriate kind of love that allows people to soften and relax and, like, widen and whole. So in countless research studies, the variable that most positively impacts treatment outcomes is the relationship. So I don't engage with any sort of consciousness medicine until I've cultivated and developed a trusting, loving, solid relationship with the client.
Mm.
That's number one. Like, mm-hmm. I have to greenlight it, and he or she needs to greenlight it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned like the kind of raised eyebrows, the fear that comes up, and without education or experience in the world that we live in, by and large, people are going to be afraid of it, and people are going to think, oh, this is, you know, my brain on drugs. If you're, you know, kind of my age, and it's a cracked egg on a pan. I don't want that.
Well, you mentioned again the roller coaster thing, and in an uncontrolled environment, that's the experience some people can have.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So I mean, similar to many other drugs out there, in an uncontrolled environment can be very, very destructive. So
yeah. Yeah. So that's why set and setting are so important. Like, mm-hmm. what is your mindset and where are you? Now, I believe that one can have really fruitful experiences that are not clinical, but they must be intentional. And a difficult experience doesn't make for a bad one. We need to interface with painful content in order to release it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that when someone is coming to, quite frankly, therapy or a psychedelic, it's because something inside of them needs to die. And my job as the facilitare, to make easy, is how do we do that? And like, and as much kind of kindness and comfort as possible. Like, how do we die well in order to live?
Hmm.
The war on drugs, I just want to speak to that quickly, is a war on people of color. And it started, you know, opiates and what has happened in the BIPOC community makes my blood boil and breaks my heart.
Hmm.
And that is something that continues and something that we're also making a lot of progress around. So I celebrate that. And it's very, very, very serious. There's a lot of exciting research too that is allowing for people to reorganize their thinking around these experiences and to become more nuanced in how they approach the world of quote unquote drugs.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Cocaine is not the same as psilocybin.
No. Right. No, it's not.
and I was saying to you earlier, like as a Jewish woman who's, you know, it's Friday, right? It's Shabbat Shalom to the new Jewish listeners. Like it's, or not Jewish listeners, it's a resting ritual. We drink wine,
mm-hmm.
in a way that's elevated and celebrated in a good way. Now, alcohol is one of the most pernicious drugs that exists. You don't see people beating up their partners on mushrooms. You don't see people crashing their cars and killing each other on the same kind of like levels that it can be so deeply intertwined with alcohol. So the conversation needs to be specific around what we're talking about, like, mm-hmm. what compound, what plant. Like, cocaine comes from cocoa leaves. There's ways in which you can use those in elevated ways. Generally speaking, cocaine, not a good thing to do, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then how do we draw the line? Like, what drugs are the ones that we're fighting for? And then how do we do it in a way that we get to elevate in growing clinically,
mm-hmm.
and not abuse it out in socially?
Right. So I've learned to take more of a harm reduction approach. And whenever somebody is ingesting any sort of mind-altering substance, including wine or alcohol or whatever, cocaine, whatever, psilocybin, ayahuasca, whatever it is, and these are all very, very different things.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental question that I want the answer to is, are you going inward for elevation, celebration, healing, discovery, holding, or are you leaving? If you're leaving, I have a lot of compassion for you. If you're leaving and because something here doesn't feel okay, doesn't feel tolerable, you're an expert. I'm not. I don't know what it's like in there. And I hope that you can learn to be with it.
Mm.
But until then, I have a lot of compassion.
Yeah.
So the conversation needs to be nuanced. And I believe in decriminalizing all drugs so that people who are abusing, quote unquote, or people who are struggling to be here can have easier, less stigmatized access to care.
Mm, that would be huge.
Right? And
so we're not just slapping cuffs on them and throwing them in a cell where they're never going to get the proper psychiatric care and they're never going to get the proper path to true healing in their journey.
Correct. And the way that you said that was exactly right, Dom, because it's shaming, it's humiliating.
Yeah. Who do we call in a mental health crisis? Police officers a lot of the times.
Yeah.
Are they, you know, equipped always to handle somebody who might be going through a mental health crisis? No.
No. No, and it makes it worse.
And are there drugs at the scene when they show up? What's that? What's a police officer doing in those scenarios? I mean, I'm not, again, there's a lot of training and a lot of things that need to happen for how we approach these to be able to fight some of the systemic issues that it's caused us.
And again, it's like back to the war on drugs. Like, so there's these associations.
What do we fight first? We fight the drugs first, not the mental health issue that is clearly in the room.
Right. And yeah. You know, my clinical training years were in a drug and alcohol treatment facility that was populated by people as an alternative to incarceration. So I was working with people on drug charges. And whoa, was that psychedelic for me as, like, you know, quite frankly, like a white, educated and privileged woman.
Oh, yeah.
And I was looking at the underbelly of a world that I didn't swim in. And it changed me. And I it was hard, but I integrated it, and it fuels me now for the work that I do as an educator and activist. And, you know, with respect to how these tools work for in a treatment context, wow, there's much to say.
I'd love to dive into that.
Yeah.
You brought up a few things in the context of anxiety, depression, PTSD. I mean, some of the things we're mentioning now with mental illness. Mm-hmm. I think there's application that I'd love for you to speak into and research that's always ongoing, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we all have trauma. The question is like what's your font? Are you bold? Mm-hmm. Times New Roman, Helvetica. We all have it. And how do we integrate what's been painful and still keep our hearts open and our faces to the sun? How do we stay in the stream of aliveness and in good connection and relationship with ourselves and other people? Oftentimes trauma has in the place of walking wars against ourselves. And that then spirals out. So I'm really operating with the belief that individual healing and wholing belongs to the collective. So as you heal, you offer that vibration to the collective, and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for doing that work. And again, like I bring loving relationship, and then when it's appropriate, I work with consciousness medicine. And, you know, I'm trained by MAPS in the MDMA protocol, which is almost completed all of the regulatory like dances and kind of stages through the FDA and is being rolled out in the Veterans Association and different communities for treating complex PTSD and CPTSD defined as a prolonged exposure.
Mm.
Combat vets, people who were molested through years in their childhood, who have a lot to regulate in their bodies, right? Like the body keeps the score.
Great book.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you, Bessel. And the issues are in the tissues. And, you know, if you don't transform it, you transfer it. So we have a lot of responsibility to take care of what's alive inside. Now, MDMA is the medicine for complex PTSD. And the work that's been done there is astounding, is like jaw-dropping. And researchers who've spent their entire lives, like decades doing this work, are flabbergasted and throwing their names all over it. And I'm excited about that. We're not fully at the place where MDMA therapy is fully legal, and it's a treatment that takes a lot of time, and that will be an issue in terms of the providers and who's trained and all this, but very, very hopeful.
That's what I was going to ask about. How often would people have to do MDMA? How often are they led through? What is the integration process? Like, what is kind of that timeline?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd have to go back on my notes because this was a while ago that I was trained, but it's if I'm recalling accurately, it's about 3 to 4 sessions spaced about a month apart.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of integration work that happens on the front end, in between sessions and on the back end.
Yeah.
And the way that MDMA works for someone who may not have had that experience or who only knows it as like Molly at a nightclub, very different, is an individual is able to stay connected to their egoic identity construction. They're still very much in their own stories, but without the armor, mm-hmm. without the fear, without the
shame.
Yeah. So someone can kind of go back to a devastating moment and really reconstitute themselves in that place where in this time and space dimension, it would be too dysregulating to go there. They might be deeply dissociated from it and tell it like a story, or they just may be too upregulated and triggered to even touch it.
Mm-hmm.
So people can reorganize their internal systems and there's science, which I'm not a scientist, but there's a lot of research out there that I can point you to in sort of show notes if you want, that demonstrates that new neural pathways are being formed and people's kind of nervous system responses are shifting and they're able to really anchor in a new sense of self in the world. It's true of psychedelics in general, but the work with MDMA therapy is like complex PTSD. I myself work with ketamine as my primary tool. It's legal and it's approved for off-label use for treating depression and anxiety. It's really great for treatment-resistant depression and anxiety. It's the way that I think about it is, and explain it, is a person will have a real significant break from ordinary mind. Like you're going to have a journey. You're going to have a round trip ticket. You're going to come back safely. It's a very safe medicine. And while many of the other psychedelics, including MDMA, have more contraindications for safe use, ketamine has very few. Many different things may present. You set intention and God laughs. Like you're going to get what you need to get. The operating system gets shaken. Your default is like shook. And often, you know, people experience themselves as pure consciousness. People, you know, have all kinds of different experiences. A lot of my clients have breakthroughs in pleasure and play and fun and joy. Hmm. Like if you're not having fun, you're missing the point of the exercise. Like this whole thing is like we're supposed to enjoy our lives.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So when you rattle the operating system, you allow a person the space and time to come back home in a good way. When a person has an experience of oneness too, it generally lends itself to more joy and embodied experience. So people come back to themselves with more softness, with more kindness, with more like love for themselves.
Mm. That's beautiful.
Do you think that happens in the integration process? Because again, you say, okay, it's a full circle journey. Like we will come back. I feel like some people are worried about like, oh, I'm not going to come back the same. I'm going to be different. Mm. Something is going to be completely changed about me. And I'm scared of that. Like,
yeah.
You know, I feel like I've heard people say that before, but I totally myself and the experiences I've had, get what you say about like just this opening up of the scope and you're able to see outside yourself a little bit and you're not seeing from just your lens, it seems.
Totally. And yeah, people are afraid of being altered in a negative way.
Yeah.
My wish, and I tell my clients this before treatment, I'm like, I hope you come back a little different. And the wish, and by the way, in converting my father to psychedelics, which I did in his 70s, I said, and he at first was like a hard no for years. He's like, no, I'm not doing that. I don't need that. That's bad. That's drugs. I'm not doing that. He came to understand the clinical side and then opened. And now we work together. But my dad, I said, you can be more yourself and you can have deeper access to your heart. And that's how I sold it. Mm. And my dad likes to say that these tools and experiences can also be good for the betterment of well people. Like it isn't just for the sick. And, you know, my approach to the work that I do in general is not one of improvement. Like there's nothing for you to improve. The work is about exfoliation. It's letting go of your defenses so that your highest self can come through, so that you can live your truth, so that you can be in the space of deep listening to yourself. Like we're getting information all day from our bodies that we've been trained to not listen to. To the extent that we ignore our own wisdom, we suffer. It just happens. So how do we, like, the work is like getting the defenses out of the way, excavating your true self.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's scary for some people, and this is my experience when, and we can talk into it more, but doing psilocybin for the first time, being led through from someone and having that whole experience, I never did anything. Mm-hmm. Like, not even weed, not mm-hmm. like I was drank socially. That's my experience with drugs. And so when I did this, it was a huge experience. Now, mind you, I'd already been through personal development programs, emotional, you know, intelligence and all of that. And I got the messages in terms of what I get to step into. But it wasn't until I actually had to let go and really, like, really let go in my body that so much more was able to open up and go places that, again, you let go of the shame, you let go of story, you let go of, like, there's so many amazing, 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 amazing things. And I do believe getting led through from someone is clinically is the best route that you can go through with something like that. But what I can see and infer is that people who have deep, deep, deep rooted shame, say they've done things in their life that they're super ashamed about. You know, they don't want anyone to know. They don't want to open up. And so it's easier to not do anything, maybe not even alcohol, not go through this kind of thing, because there would be an unlocking of it. And seeing your true self can feel very scary. So what do you say to people to invite them into the unknown of it?
First of all, one of the most important ingredients for a successful treatment experience or ceremony is a person's desire to, like, go there. Mm. You're invited into your fear. You are welcome to be afraid. Do you want to be courageous? Like, courage is nothing other than action in the face of fear. Mm. And like I said earlier, you may encounter painful content.
Yeah.
But if you can experience the pain, you can mitigate the suffering. And there will be pain. Our human experience has pain in it. And to the extent that we try to suppress it, we increase our suffering. Mm. So that's, again, where for me, the relationship becomes so important. If someone feels safe enough and held enough and like they can trust enough, can go places. Mm. And the therapeutic alliance, in my opinion, is a practice field for the relationship you have with yourself. And if you can like go there in your kind of work with your provider, then you start to like really facilitate yourself. And can you welcome the wild tides of what it is to be human? Can you feel the grief? Can you feel the rage? Can you feel the like terror? Can you feel the ecstasy? Like all of it. And can you be a good sailor with that getting slammed to the shore or like drowning in what these tides are? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all have theories about the world and about ourselves and each other. And we try to fit experiences into them. And sometimes there's outliers. And so we got to adjust the theory. And we have to keep readjusting. And it's a never ending journey and process. But what I can tell you is that freedom, empowerment, and love are available. Health is available, like total health. And I mean, you two as like rock stars in the wellness world, really living your messages authentically. And I know that, and I love that about you. You know, we're here that like, if there's sickness in the mind, it's going to show up in the body. And if there are tools that will allow someone to accelerate the process of releasing what is diseased, then we can optimize energy. We can start like living into more potential. We can, you know, people start, you know, ending relationships that need to be ended, starting relationships that need to be started, like writing the books, like doing the things and thriving. And that becomes like the permission slip for other people. It's like, it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing that I like that you said was that it helps us to revisit things, but have a slight bit more compassion for ourselves, or experience it in a slightly different way. And I've experienced that personally. And I think that's something out there, if you're listening, like, it'll let you go places, but experience it slightly differently, or cry about it for hours, but then just feel like you frickin', again, let the load out that you've probably been ignoring for a while. And that discomfort and that crying and letting yourself grieve and have compassion for whatever it was, maybe something that has been that bit in your mind that's just been building up and penting up and presenting somewhere physically. So the discomfort doesn't have to be bad. You might go places and feel something interesting, but again, it's how we use that different state to frame it once we come back and integrate it.
Totally. And I love that you talk about the self-compassion. Me, my personal journey, unlocking self-love changed the game 100%. And I was defensively walking around with a lot of self-hatred. And once I was able to put that down, feel safe enough to put it down, whew, everything shifted.
Yeah. Can you talk about your story a little bit? Because I think that's going to help people draw in ties to who you are even deeper.
Yeah. I mean, gosh. So, you know, my parents did so good and they messed up so much and they're so good and I love them so much. And they really, you know, they were human. And, you know, I had my reactions to their humanness, which really had me in a lot of perfectionism. I remember crying because I got an A minus in college. Like, that was not okay for me. And, you know, had me very anorexic. I didn't have a period for many years of my adult life. I also walked around, and this is still one that I'm cracking, but with a belief that I'm ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's an area that I have room for deeper levels of integration around, because my preoccupation with image has obstructed me from offering the fullness of my message. And so I'm aware that I've been robbing you. I've had a great deal of healing around body. Thank you, psychedelics. Thank you, specifically ayahuasca. Huge healing in my body. I love my body. Like, I love my body. I love my legs. I love my butt. I like love it. I'm so into it. It's like, thank you. Right. Mm. And then there's still more. There's still more. Welcoming my face. These tools have like helped me to see where I'm disintegrated. Right. Like, I've known that, but I'm like, okay, but actually I'm not living the truth there. So what does it mean to take the action into what I really believe? Who cares what someone else thinks? Like, I mean, for me, even to be doing the work that I do, it's renegade. It's out there. And I hope that if you're interested in this work, that you take the time to explore it and to do so in a good way. Like, there's a proliferation of you know, psychedelic blah, blah, blah. And a lot of people who are doing the work well, and a lot of people who aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But learning to open the gates of my heart to myself coincided with the proliferation of my business. Shocking, right? Of course. And, you know, the deepening of relationships in my family, the blossoming of a romantic partnership that is still quite young, but feels really kind and sweet and like sexy and fun.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, like I was like dating hurricanes in the past, you know, because I wasn't comfortable opening. Like, I'm willing to open now. And I'm different. And the difference is that I'm me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no longer trying to be something for someone else.
And I think that's what is so huge and what people need to hear as well, especially because people will see your image. People will see what your body looks like and be like, what is she talking about?
Totally.
Like, she's on drugs on something if she's not liking her body and her face and all of that. And that's where I just like, if we can drop the judgments of it and know that everyone has their own experience, trauma. Like, I remember even going into, you know, the emotional intelligence programs, and people would say, and I would say, like, I don't have trauma like that person. So who am I to speak? Who am I to feel anything? Mm-hmm. And we put these comparisons and judgments on ourselves because of what we see from other people. And it's just like, if we could just start to drop that and really feel like every individual is human with their own human experiences, their own human thoughts on themselves, their own human traumas, mm-hmm. no matter how big or small, it's a trauma.
Totally. And again, thank you for saying all that. It's the psychedelic tools allow us to also sense into collective and ancestral consciousness. We're not operating with just ourselves. Like, what's happening down the street from you is impacting you. Certain people in certain family systems who are the identified patient are like also carrying like the content of what it is to be in a sick society. Like, this isn't, we don't live in a well society. And we need to recognize that and be kind around it as we, you know, effort towards something that's more sustainable and nourishing for us all.
So where do you say that people can start to look into this kind of stuff?
Especially because you said that there's so many people doing it.
Yeah.
And how do you know that it's not just some schmo who went on a few trips themselves and now thinks that they can start having retreats versus somebody who has some real good and legit training in something like this?
Yeah, it's a good question. If someone wants like a basic book, Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind is really, really like, it's done a lot of good work. I highly recommend Fantastic Fungi. My friend Louis Schwartzberg made that film. It is stunning. It is visual medicine and a good little story on some of the research that's happening with psilocybin. If you're starting to go a little bit deeper and starting to consider a facilitator or a clinician, trust yourself, but interview people and ask them about their experience. Ask them about their training. Like, find out, like, who is this person? Do they come referred? Like, are they legit? Do they, you know, who, don't just say yes because you think you're supposed to. Mm-hmm. I tell people even when I have consultation calls, like, go where it's warm. I don't need to be it for you. Like, if you get to hire me, I am educated and trained. And I'm still not, might not be the right person for everybody. Right? I'm not going to be the right person for everybody. So I would encourage people to really be brave enough to ask whatever they want to know. And the facilitator clinician should be willing to answer any question that you have.
I don't know if you'd say this, but I'd say the same about just getting any sort of plant-based medicine or psychedelic products. Know the person who's even giving them to you, who you're getting them from, who you're purchasing them from. Because I don't know. I just feel like the energy they're carrying, where those have come from, how they were produced is very important. And just knowing all that stuff. I don't know if you can speak into that a little more if somebody's just looking to have a psilocybin experience themselves or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about buying illegal drugs, but
yeah.
That's a sensitive topic.
Yeah. But to your point, like, background check. Like, background check the plant, background check the person, like be responsible. And if you're engaging with any of these tools for the sake of exploration and like self-development and, you know, growth, healing, holing, whatever, set and setting, like, you know, of course you want to make sure that the quality of whatever you're ingesting is good, but like, make sure you have
support.
Intention. Make mm-hmm. sure you're like with someone that can like take care of you. Yeah. If you're not, you know, in therapy with these tools or sitting in a ceremony, right? Facilitators and shamans can get so loaded with like, you're basically God, and then it gets messy.
Yeah.
You know, how do we be together in it all? Like, I'm not better than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to share and care. I'm here to like offer what I know, and I'm here to be brave about it.
Well, and guide.
Yeah.
And you're not looking to someone to hold you up. No. You know, you're looking to be just held and space open.
Totally. I like to say too that I don't help anyone. Like, people, I'm not in that business. People help themselves.
Yes.
I'm here to support you. Like, I will hold your hand and walk down any trail, but I don't know the trails.
Yeah.
Like, you know the drills. And you know, so in my clinical practice, when I'm building relationship first and getting kind of the story and like the who's who in your zoo and what the content is, that allows me to be valuable in meaning making after a treatment and in anchoring in whatever shows up to support a person into flowering the experience in their lives. Because like the psychedelic isn't for being somewhere else. Like it's for here.
That's an important message right there.
Oh yeah. It is so that you are here. We're not trying to be somewhere else. Like you activate and you kind of experience something that's like, oh wow, I have a totally different perspective now.
But then you integrate it with someone clinically to understand how it's going to support your life in the here and in the now.
Yeah. And people then heal 360. People's bodies heal when their minds heal.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, I think it's good to open it up to like who is this work for? Like if someone's listening, they've been to therapy for many, many years. And not that that's bad. Like you can go and talk with someone all the time. But if you're not feeling shifts in your life, or if you're having constant anxiety, constant pains, constant...
I think you mentioned like treatment-resistant depression and anxiety. I think that was a term you may have used earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's great for so many different things. Ketamine specifically is great for, like I said, treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, suicidality, OCD, eating disorders, end-of-life care. Ketamine can really support someone in having an experience that feels like they're dying. And that's the invitation to live. And that's the invitation to let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. These tools, I believe I said this earlier, like are for the betterment of well people. You know, if someone wants to grow and you're ready to kind of dive in, because again, you're not just operating with your own consciousness. Like there's so much more out there.
But what kind of also treatment centers are you looking for? Like if someone's like, okay, let me go to Google, look at my local therapists. Like, how do I know?
So MAPS has a directory, MAPS.org. Okay. MAPS is the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. They have a solid directory of integration practitioners and psychedelic therapists. There's Psychedelic Directory as well, which has a number of names across the country. And yeah, it's hard because a lot of, especially if it's not ketamine, it's illegal most places right now.
Yeah.
So, and my, you know, I'm, like I said, trained in MDMA and eager to activate that tool in my practice. And I effort in many ways to be agnostic about what we're ingesting because the work is about what you do with it. Like, whether it's ayahuasca, psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine, LSD, whatever. I would use them for different things. Bottom line, I mean, there's almost every kind of condition can be treated like on some level if the conditions are right. Someone who's flirting with psychosis is kind of going to be a no.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
What about someone who's had addiction struggle?
No problem if it's done well. I've worked with a lot of people in my practice who are sober for a long time. I've worked with a lot of people in my practice who've gotten sober through this work. And in fact, little known story that I like to tell is that Bill Wilson, who's one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, decades after the inception of AA, advocated for the use of LSD in recovery. And he advocated for it because it helped him with his depression, which he was still suffering with in his sobriety. The AA world, which I love, and you know, I'm also a certified alcohol and substance abuse counselor, does such good. And it also gets overly rigid and doesn't allow for people to sometimes, not always. It depends on the application, the understanding, et cetera. But it can be limited.
Mm.
It's not a complete rule out addiction and these tools.
Got it.
I mean, in my own story with some depression, addiction, post-concussive stuff, anxiety, like that's where I went to breath work, because I kind of had that those feelings and that broadening of my scope and the ability to have compassion for myself. And that all like melted away a lot of what I was experiencing. And that's kind of what I mentioned earlier, where it connected me with a cousin who's like, wow, that was very opening. Have you ever tried plant medicine?
Yeah.
So that's where I, if people who are experiencing the things that I experienced on any degree and plant medicine can help them, I want them to have access to that personally.
Right.
Because of what I experienced. And
And people should. Like, the level of growth that I've seen in my father at this stage and age is astounding. It's like, it's never too late.
Mm-hmm.
And people realize, like, so much, you know, our culture has us divorce mind and body. Our culture has us acting as slave drivers in our vessels, using and abusing our bodies for what we want them to do, not in the space of listening. Our forms of education are domestication, and we start to lose touch with like our wild and like our weird and our fun, right? Like, let your freak flag fry. Like, let yourself be in the play of the theater of life. And, you know, trauma lives in the body. Again, we all have it. And it obstructs our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us sick.
Mm-hmm.
And the work of healing doesn't stop. But if you do it, it's like things can get so good and so juicy and so like, ugh. Like, really,
it's a great way of defining it. I mean, you guys got to be here to really see this, but
yeah. And you know, you have to feel. You can't think a feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Feelings are like our energy in motion. It's emotion. And how do we get there? How do we get there so that we can, you know, the shortcut isn't around. The shortcut is like in and through. And, you know, Peter Levine talks a lot about somatic experiencing, and animals in the wild will literally shake after they see something traumatic.
Yep.
And we don't do that. So we trap the energy, and then our minds find all these like really cool, unique ways to keep us in some sort of pattern, which is protective, but also suffering.
And I think too, some of the messaging, you know, in is like, oh, if you're feeling some way, what are you going to do to shift it right away? Right? Turn on a happy podcast, turn on a happy song, dance it out, and you're going to shift without allowing the feeling. And I think that's where it can get damaging in that world. If you're not allowed to feel it, you have to feel it to free it. Most people do, I will say, is that you need assistance to support you through that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had so much assistance as I was working through my own trauma, mm-hmm. you know, and allowing that, going to somatic bodywork retreats, going through women retreats, doing plant medicine with someone, like it all played its role.
And I really effort to have an integrative approach to wellness. So whether that's like a functional medicine assessment, your diet, your exercise, your community, your, you know, therapy, all of it. Like, we're not meant to do this alone.
Mm-mm.
Babies die if they're not held. We get to activate the things that work in order to be here more. We get these skin suits for a short and unpredictable period of time. And like, my wish is for people to really enjoy them and to really love hard and love big and love in the kind of way that absolutely includes the self.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you love yourself, like, the only logical thing to do is love other people and celebrate their wins and not feel like it's something that you don't have. You know, when I look at pollution on the beach and I live at a very polluted beach, I'm understanding this as the internal beaches of a person are polluted. They don't care. They don't care about themselves, so why are they going to care about the beach? When you can experience the profundity of love, which is available to you right now, you don't need a psychedelic. However, the psychedelic can get you there quick. Your world will change. And you'll be able to interact with your emotional life very differently, with your inner worlds very differently. And it's not like a graduation kind of station. We're not going somewhere and done and like, okay, it's over. And I mean, when you die and then they get something else, who knows? But like, you know, it's the work in quotes is good.
It's a journey.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot, it's often been said in conversations around these tools that like, you know, a very serious meditation practice can get you to the same place. It can, but it might take decades. And most people don't have that kind of discipline. I don't. I mean, I wish I did, but like, if there's something that's available that can be engaged with in a responsible way in order to help me access more of what is me, access more of what I'm part of, I say yes. And I stand with like eons of people doing this work.
Yeah. It's so beautiful.
It's incredible. Continuing to grow connections within our internal systems, within our communities, all ecosystems, generationally. Like you said, there's so much awesome applications in how we can open up our scopes. How can people just find you? Where can they find you and what you're doing and stay, keep tabs on all the amazing things that you put into the world?
My website is embodiedlife.com, InbodiedLife. And my Instagram is lauren.taus. I have also a podcast. It's Embodied Life, has a major focus over the last season on mental health and psychedelics. So lots of cool conversations with leaders in the field. And I hope to offer more and more and more and more and more and welcome contact, and so grateful to share some of what I do and know and love with you guys. Like such a gift. Thank you.
Such an amazing conversation, and I know that so many people are going to learn from it and hopefully open up their mindset around it a little bit, you know. And that's just what we do in these conversations, is welcome the experiences of others, the teachings of others, and the healing of what's possible within the body. And that's what you provide. So thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for taking the time to share it all with us.
Such a pleasure. Love you guys so big.
Love you.
Thank you. And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.